Welcome to episode 484 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And we are back after a crazy week of keynotes.
Did you get to watch any of them?
Yeah.
I didn't get to watch any of them.
Oh, yeah. I watched Google I.O. today. We record on Tuesdays, so today was Google I.O. Yesterday was Build. I only got to watch the Vision keynote, which really doesn't have anything tactical in it, so that was not as much fun for me. But there's cool stuff going on in these companies. I should invest in them. Oh, wait. I already have. Okay, good.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we jump right into the feedback?
Oh, okay. Now we're done with that.
Right. No feedback this week. I'm a little disappointed, guys. I specifically asked for monitor recommendations, and there was only one person who gave me monitor recommendations, and it was Richard. So I'm going to need some from you all, especially since Richard doesn't have any recommendations when it comes to monitors from a gaming perspective. So help me out, guys.
I'll bet my monitor would be really good from a gaming perspective. It's just probably not what you want to be spending on a monitor.
Yeah. No, and there's no way Jen would let me put a 34-inch monitor on this desk or however big that thing is.
38? Hello?
38? It's 38 inches?
It's a 38-inch ultra-wide curved monitor. It is friggin' awesome, although it was really funny. Today, I was in a conference call. We use Zoom. I don't know if you've ever used Zoom.
Yep, but I use it every day.
When someone shares something or when someone leaves sharing, it switches every viewer to full screen mode. And so we were sharing, and then someone stopped sharing, and the next thing I know, I look up, and this dude is looking right at me, and his face is bigger than mine.
Right.
It was really creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, if you do want to send us some feedback, the email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can use the contact form. All of the rest of our information will be at the end of the show or over in the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com, which I think may be worth pointing out is maybe our site's running faster. I don't know if it's running faster enough for you all to notice. Depends. We're going to talk a lot about whether or not people can perceive the differences in things tonight. We can maybe start by saying you might perceive a difference in how fast our website loads in a positive direction. So that's all we'll say on that, but it should be better. Let's get on to some actual news that people care about.
Indeed. And this started with today's Google I.O. announcements. I watched that because I wanted to find out what they were doing in the smart home space. Why are we talking about smart home? Well, one of their new devices, and we anticipated this, the Nest Hub Max, which is the rebranded version of basically a Google Home hub, but big. So they call it the Nest Hub Max, and it's a 10-inch display, 720p, speakers, subwoofer, stereo speakers, has a camera on it, recognizes gestures and faces, and it just may be the perfect kitchen entertainment device.
Ooh, that's strong words. So before I ask you why you think it might be the perfect kitchen entertainment device, I do want to point out one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you're shortening the name of this from its proper name. I believe it is actually called the Google Nest Hub Max.
I don't believe it is.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't believe it is. They did not refer to it that way on stage at all.
Okay, everything ever that I was reading like on Engadget and stuff called it Google Nest Hub Max. And when, now my phone is responding to me. Awesome. And shush. And I got an email from, I got numerous messages from Google today that said, now announcing Google Nest. And Google Nest is a stupid name.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to call things Google nest in terms of branding for products. I just don't see that happening. I think they're going to continue to leverage the Nest name as a product.
And introducing Google Nest.
No, I know. I know that. But Google Nest is a line, and then those products are Nest products. So okay. We'll see how this ends up playing out. Google is actually pretty good at branding, unlike Microsoft.
Right.
So I tend to think that they'll pull this one off okay. I'm not a big fan of the Max thing that they're slapping on everything that's bigger, but whatever.
Right.
So, yeah. So I'm going to call it the Nest Hub Max.
So why do you think this might be the perfect kitchen entertainment device?
Well, when you were on my Home On show a couple of episodes ago, you and I talked about the Google Home Hub. And the thing that we liked about it was that visual element added in to the audio interaction that you'd have and the ability to bring up videos and music and whatever you want. But the screen was too small for the kitchen. A 10-inch screen, I think, while it gets a little bit more wieldy on a counter because it's taking up more space, I think it probably is a much better size for something that you have on the counter and maybe want to be able to see from across the kitchen or across the counter if you're doing something. If you want to play a video for how to do what, or if you just want to watch TV or Netflix or whatever else that they might make available on it. They're going to have YouTube, obviously, and YouTube TV is going to be available on it. So you'll be able to watch regular TV channels if you want to, recorded content, whatever. Plus, it has access to any of the music that you can play through your Google Home. So I think it's a really fantastic device. You know, we've talked for the longest time about the idea of a kitchen computer. And I know that some people have them. And Microsoft has been rumored to be toying with this idea for years and years and years and years and years and years. And nothing's ever come out. But if you think about it, it just makes sense. Like something where you can get to information visually in the kitchen and also be able to interact with it and be able to get your entertainment on it all in one device makes a lot of sense. I think that's a great thing. How much would you pay for that, Josh?
Hundreds of dollars, Richard.
Would you pay as much as Apple was ridiculous enough to think you might pay for one speaker, which was $349?
Honestly, I don't think that would be an absurd price for a device like this, except for the fact that Lenovo had one pretty similar to this last year for a lot less than that.
Right, exactly. So there's already market pressure to keep the prices a little bit more reasonable. This is coming in at $229. And it's going to be available this summer, which I just think that price is crazy good. Like that is better than it needs to be. I expected $279, maybe $259.
And when you get to Black Friday, I bet it's $179.
Yeah, very, very possibly. I mean, we have seen the Google Home Hub, now known as the Nest Hub. This is going to be so hard to... we've seen that at $79 already, just $79. So that too is coming down in price. That is still, I think, a good entertainment device. Great, great kind of a nightstand device or maybe office device. That is going to be only $129. I think they're right on with pricing. I mean, they were really pushing reasonable prices at this event, and this was just kind of one of them. You know, they did the same thing with the new Pixel. Enough so that I might actually trade in my iPhone 7 to get a second phone, get the new Pixel as a second phone.
That would be a smart idea.
Because I could get that for $150 with a trade-in.
Nice.
Yeah.
I do want to clarify one thing before we move on from the story. You did mention Netflix. Right now, no Netflix on Google Home Hub. Google Nest Hub, Nest Hub Max, none of that stuff. You
Good
can
point.
Cast most apps that you can cast to a Nest Hub. Netflix is not one of them, though. Still.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, I don't actually know that I knew that.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's been that's been the case since the original Google Nest. So, gosh, I hate these names already. Since the Google Home Hub came out.
Actually, I think the transition period is what's going to be nasty. Right. We'll get used to it eventually.
Yeah, actually, since the Lenovo ones came out, because they came out before Google's own device. So, yeah, it's been a while. Hmm. All right, well, let's stick with some Google news. This isn't out of Google I/O. This came out a few days prior to that. But YouTube Premium, which is basically sort of like YouTube's Netflix type service. I feel like we need to clarify all of this because Google/YouTube has 47 different streaming media services that all do different things. Some of them do the same things. It's super confusing. So YouTube Premium is like Netflix. You pay $12 a month. You get access to some YouTube originals and you get an ad-free viewing experience on YouTube.
It's that thing they nag you about pretty much every other time you go into the YouTube app.
Right. Right. The new thing here is that what they've announced is all of their originals going forward will be available for free, meaning you won't need to have YouTube Premium to watch them. They're just going to have ads, which totally makes sense. It's YouTube. We're used to seeing ads. So this is going to start with season 3 of Cobra Kai, which I think is this month, and anybody can just watch it with ads. If you pay for YouTube Premium, you'll get it without ads. So that's cool for everything going forward. For things that they've released previously, it's kind of a mess. It's kind of all up in the air. They have said that seasons 1 and 2 of Cobra Kai will be available in this free tier, if you want to call it that, but only during certain windows. So, yeah, season 1 is going to be available for like a couple of months, and then they're going to take it off of the free tier, and that's when season 2 will become available in like August or something like that. It's really weird, and they haven't given details on when any of the other originals would be made available for free, and I would bet that that all comes down to licensing agreements with the producers and all that sort of stuff. I don't know for sure, but
yeah, I mean, usually that's the case, but these are all originals that they commissioned. And I believe that they have I can't imagine that YouTube didn't negotiate good licensing rights for them with the producers of these shows that they commissioned. I believe, just based on what you just said, that those windows are being defined strategically to drive subscriptions to YouTube Premium, to give you a taste of the content that they have. And Cobra Kai is the perfect example of this because people who have watched it rave about it. So let's show people how good this stuff is and get them to pay for this, because they're not going to likely be able to watch it all within the tight windows that we're going to make it available.
It's just weird that season 1 isn't going to be made available prior. Like, that would all make sense if it was all going to be prior to season 3.
No, it's perfect, because if you want to see it for free, then all right, well, maybe I'll get the free trial and then maybe I'll stick with it for another month so that I can see all of the old stuff, and then I'll just cancel it and watch the new stuff. I think they're going to suck people in by thinking, oh, well, I have to catch up.
Mm. Well, that's a good theory. That's a really good theory.
I don't like it. It's sleazy. I hate this crap where windows are basically designed for the benefit of the licensee or the provider.
Right.
Not for consumers.
So I was trying to refamiliarize myself with all of these different services, because we're also going to talk about YouTube Music in a little bit. They actually have kind of a nice offering here, because YouTube Premium also, I think, if I'm reading things correctly, which it's all super confusing, also gives you access to YouTube Music. It's included.
Right.
And it's $12 a month. And it's basically got family plan built in. You can have six. I'm not even holding up six fingers. I'm not sure what I'm doing here.
one hand right. worth of six fingers. Right.
I don't have six fingers or six digits on one hand, so I'm not sure how that works. But you can have six Google accounts connected to that. They're all supposed to be in the same family. So that's premium, originals on YouTube. It's music similar to Spotify. It's downloadable YouTube music videos and stuff. It's the ability to listen to YouTube in the background while you're doing other things on your devices. It's all of that for $12 a month, which actually sounds like a pretty amazing deal. What am I missing here? Like, why shouldn't I drop Spotify like a bad habit and switch to this?
I'm curious what that music experience is like, because if it's what the kids are doing, which is basically search YouTube for whatever artist or whatever song you want to listen to, and then it plays, I don't want that. I want an organized music library and browsing experience. So unless they offer that, I wouldn't have the patience for it.
Mm.
And I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they do offer something that is a more traditional music browsing experience. I don't have any exposure to it. I've never tried it. They keep on nagging me about that too.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I opened up the app on my Pixel 3 today and it said, hey, you want to try a 6-month free trial? 6-month free trial? Maybe I should.
Wow.
Maybe I should. I wonder if that's just a Pixel thing, because when I opened it on my Samsung tablet, it talked about a 3-month trial. So if you're going to buy a Pixel, maybe wait until you get that and then try this trial and we can try it together. So,
yeah.
All right, let's move on. We do have another YouTube Music story here. So I mentioned they've got like 47 different services. One of them that's still around is Google Play Music. It's sort of still around. They're basically trying to kill that off and replace it with YouTube Music. But there's still some things that Google Music does, Google Play Music, that YouTube Music doesn't do until now. There is at least one less feature that separates them, and that is the ability to play your own local music library. And like this story really stood out to me because, Richard, how many questions have we gotten from people in the past who have said, I like the idea of these music streaming services, but I've still got my own library and I want to be able to play it all. Well, here's another potential solution to that that is not super kludgy. This only works on Android right now, which isn't really that big of a limiting factor. Android is the number one smartphone platform in the world and is pretty huge in the US too. So throw all of your music on your phone. It plays in YouTube Music now. There is one weird caveat to all of that, though. You can't put your local tracks in the same playlist as tracks from YouTube. You got any theories on that? Like, is this just a technical limitation that they'll overcome eventually? Or do you think this is actually some sort of licensing problem?
No, this is not a licensing problem. This is an experience problem.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think they'll eventually figure this out, but I suspect it has to do with there are two different infrastructures supporting the playback of these different types of music, and the cloud infrastructure can't technically see what you have on your device. So it's doing all of that locally, and your playlists are in the cloud. They need to figure out how to solve that.
Okay. Well, yeah, so that actually gives me hope that they will be able to solve that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, this is weird. Keep in mind, this is talking about music that you have on your device. This is not like what I think you used to be able to do with Google Play Music, and I don't think you can anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can still do with Apple Music, which is the ability to basically upload my own content to the cloud and have all of it available to me through their cloud. This is not that. This is local tracks that reside on an individual local device, which may be different from device to device.
Mm-hmm.
That's another reason that those playlists would be kind of complicated.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. And the other downside to this being music stored locally on your device is you can't cast it. Most casting scenarios when it comes to Android and Google Cast, when you cast media, you're actually telling the target that you're casting to start streaming on its own.
Yeah. Play this address from this location.
Exactly.
You're not actually sending the video or the audio from your device to the receiver.
Which is one of the reasons it works so well.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, AirPlay does the same thing when it can. It can't always do that, but when it's possible for it to replicate it from a cloud source, then it does that because that's much more efficient.
Right, right. Is that only true with AirPlay 2, or has that been the case for a while?
Good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. All right, one more audio story.
This should have been in video. This is not an audio story.
It's an audio story.
It's about Netflix.
But it's audio on Netflix. Netflix is rolling out a new high-quality audio experience specifically for Richard Gunther. Because
for its videos.
Well, sure. But it's still audio. They're not changing the video quality. They're increasing the audio quality. So they're upping the bitrate on your 5.1 tracks. It's going up to 640 kilobits per second. And they're now offering Atmos through Netflix at 768 kilobits per second. You will have to be a Netflix premium subscriber. That is the $15, soon to be $16 a month subscription plan from Netflix to get Atmos audio.
Yeah, now Atmos has been available. It's just been very, very limited. So I'm hoping this means that as they're also expanding its quality, that they're expanding its coverage. Because right now, the titles that offer Atmos are few and far between.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, you're giving me a lot of grief for putting this in the audio section instead of the video section, but are you excited about this? This is one of the stories that I was teasing earlier when I said some people won't be able to perceive the difference. Are you one of the people that, like, do you think you are going to be able to perceive a difference in this upgraded audio quality?
So it's hard for me to know without really knowing what they're going from. I mean, I will say I haven't ever perceived the Atmos on Netflix as particularly bad. It's not like listening to XM radio or anything, which just always sounds lossy and flat, right? But I still do, if I'm watching a video that I own on a 4K Atmos disc, I still do go for the disc and install that because I know that it's going to be a better video and audio experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can get the audio better, that is, in my opinion, I know this is going to sound like blasphemy, and that is, in my opinion, probably more important than getting their video better than it is now.
Hmm.
Because I think their video is already pretty good. It's hard to discern video issues if you have a good Netflix stream, even on their 4K video.
Right. That is true.
And I watch a lot of, you know, I watch stuff like Sabrina, which is all night scenes.
And dark scenes are where you're going to notice video problems.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. And it's actually a good thing that you pointed that out, because one of the other things that they touted in this announcement is an adaptive bitrate for the audio streaming. So if your internet connection significantly decreases its bandwidth, they can automatically decrease the bandwidth of the audio. And that sounds great, but these numbers are nothing compared to the bitrate of the video. You know, when you're watching 4K video, you're looking at 15 megabits and it might drop to 10 or 8 or something like that. From 15 to 8 megabits. And here, at the max, we're talking 768 kilobits. So it's not like you're going to be saving that much bandwidth by decreasing the bitrate on your audio.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I'm glad that they're improving it. I think I'll be eager to try it out. Is this something that is going to be available like right away, or is this a pre-announcement for something?
I think this is something that's coming soon. And with Netflix, they have so many devices to support that even if it was available now on some things, it's not available now on everything. And it probably won't be available on absolutely everything because there are just so many devices.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm thinking probably Apple TV, Roku are going to be their high priorities right now.
Mm-hmm. Game consoles probably up there, but not as high as those two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. Speaking of game consoles, one more news story this week. And this, I think, was actually the most surprising news story to me. This is from the Sony side of the house. Sony PlayStation is getting EA Access. This is a service that launched almost 5 years ago.
Yeah.
On the Xbox One.
Yeah. Like, this is about damn time.
Well, the funny thing about this is when Microsoft and EA announced this back in 2014, Sony said, yeah, we looked at this service, but we didn't think it provided the right experience for PlayStation users. Really? What does that even mean? And what changed about it?
That is Sony being proprietary Sony.
Right.
We're doing it our way. We have our partners. We don't want something that everybody else has.
Yeah, exactly. So as a brief recap of what EA Access is, it is a subscription game service similar to Game Pass where you pay monthly and you get access to a library of games that you then download to your console as if you had purchased them. And you can play them for as long as you have the subscription. You also get a discount on the game. If you want to purchase the games, you get a 10% discount on them. You get early access to games, usually up to a week, I think it is. And any new games that come out, you get a 10-hour trial on. Now, what games are in these? Is it all EA games? No, it's not. It is older EA games. So obviously they release new Madden and NHL and FIFA games every single year in the fall. Those won't come into the EA Access vault until winter or spring. So new games aren't available right away, but these trials are available right away. The cost is really, really reasonable. It's $4.99 a month if you want to pay month to month, or for a whole year, $29.99. It's the same price on Xbox, and they have basically the same service on PC. It's called Origin Access on PC. The interesting thing to point out there is if you already have EA Access on your Xbox, that doesn't mean you get access to it on PlayStation. It's a separate subscription. If you want all of this on both consoles, you have to pay separately. It comes out in July. If you're wondering what games you'll be able to play, me too, they haven't said. I mean, you can assume a lot of the recent or most of the EA games that have released for the PS4 during this generation will be available, but the library will almost definitely have to be significantly smaller than the library that's available on the Xbox One because the Xbox can do backwards compatibility. So on the Xbox side, you've got a bunch of Xbox 360 games that are available via EA Access. So all in all, it's good to see it happening. I do actually think that these game subscription services make a ton of sense for most people. Not as much for me, because as I've discovered about myself, I really just need NHL and The Division, and I don't play anything else.
You get stuck on a game or two, and you're on that for like a year.
Right, right. Or in the case of NHL, just all the time.
Always.
All years, right. I just wait for the next one to come out, and then it's a new game, right? So I guess it's not multiple use. Yeah, so that's it for that story. We don't need to cover Games with Gold. We did all that last time, but we do now know what the free PlayStation Plus games are for the month of May. And this is actually, these games are available starting today, the day we're recording this, May 7th. Now it's just two games a month on PlayStation Plus. You're getting What Remains of Edith Finch.
That's so cool.
It's so cool. And Overcooked. Like, you're getting two really great games. I love both of these games. So if you've got PlayStation Plus, absolutely get both of them, but play What Remains of Edith Finch and then come back to the DMZ, because for story players, we played this game and released a podcast all about it. So you'll want to check that out after playing What Remains of Edith Finch. It is technically one of these walking simulator genre games, but it is excellent storytelling. It is such a cool game. So
and I actually listened to that with you guys, and I really enjoyed it, not even having played the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that cool of a game. It is still one of my most favorite games that we've played for story players. Absolutely one of the best. And then Overcooked, cool. I've talked about a million times on in the past about that game. It's multiplayer fun. Go and play it with your friends, as long as you have a strong relationship, because you'll probably be yelling at each other. So hopefully your relationship can withstand some of, you know, fun natured yelling as you're barking out orders in the kitchen. All right, that's it for our gaming news. That's it for all of our news for this week. Richard, is there anything going on in your entertainment center other than Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, good. Because I only have to watch one Game of Thrones a week now. It's so nice. It's so nice. It's so much easier. And we're also recording like the day after, which just like it just makes that whole process so much. By the way, in case you don't know, Let's Talk About Thrones, podcast that I do, talking about, guess what, Game of Thrones. And while we're covering this last season, we have guests on nearly every episode. There's a really good chance our next guest is going to be Molly Wood. So join in for that when we'll be talking about episode 805, the title of which I haven't yet looked up. But, you know, it's probably the big battle one. So, yeah. All right. Yeah. Game of Thrones season 8, almost done. 2 episodes left. 3 hours remaining of content. They better not wrap this damn thing up in the last 5 minutes. I'm going to be so pissed.
I cannot wait for this to be done.
So the people will stop talking about
it. Yes. Like, you can't even go to tech news sites on Mondays anymore, because even the tech news sites, it's all Game of Thrones news. I don't care. I don't care.
But you don't care about the coffee cup that they accidentally left out?
No, you don't care about the coffee cup.
All right, whatever. So, by the way, HBO owned that with the best press release ever. So you should look that up if you're interested. All right. So I've also been watching Modern Family, keeping up with that, trying to catch up on New Amsterdam because I'm behind on that. And This Is Us, keeping up with The Amazing Race, which is a really good season. I am loving this season. And keeping up with the Office UK old episodes, as the folks on Cord Killers Spoiler in Time are talking about that. And we watched like a ton of episodes of The Cool Kids the other night as we got the new pup to fall asleep on the sofa while watching TV. And we were like, I'm not moving. You moving? Nope, I'm not moving. Okay, let's watch another one. And I think we ended up watching like 5 episodes in a row.
Wow.
So so that was pretty fun. And that's pretty much it. And not a whole lot of television over the last week, because I've been working a lot and doing a lot of podcasting.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Not a lot going on in my entertainment center either. It's been very busy week, very busy weekend. No TV or movies that I watched in the last week that I can remember, at least. Not even a ton of gaming. I even missed out on my Sunday night Division 2 gaming session. We were out doing some other stuff. So a little bit of Division, a little bit of NHL, not a ton. Well, actually, it was funny. The other day at work, I think it was last Thursday or Friday, I was having a conversation with my coworkers about Game Pass and how I finally remembered to turn off the recurring billing because I haven't been playing Game Pass games in the last couple of months. So why am I paying for this? And one of the guys jokingly said, but what about Forza Horizon 4? And you know, he's joking because we haven't played it since like November. And that night I got online and one of my friends who I normally play hockey with said, yeah, I don't want to play hockey. Let's play Forza Horizon 4. So I did play some of that this weekend. There is one thing that I'm hoping to watch between now and next week, though. Today, I discovered that a movie called The Wandering Earth. Have you heard of this yet?
I have not.
It is a sci-fi movie that was produced, and I think the entire cast, it was made in China. I think it's all in Chinese, probably the subtitles and all that stuff.
Okay.
It is supposed to be phenomenal. It's supposed to be really, really good. Like one of the best movies to come out of China yet. And it just came to Netflix. So, which I think is the first way we've been able to watch this movie in the United States. So I'm going to try and watch that over the next few days. I'm really excited about it. So that was called The Wandering Earth.
All right.
Yeah. So,
and that's it.
That is it. Yep.
Wow, that's a quick show.
Uh-oh, GP3 is saying that a guy at work was talking about it and said it was horrible. That's not what I've heard. I've heard it's really good. I'm going to give it a try, and hopefully we'll let you know next week. If you want to send me some monitor recommendations or any other feedback, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard. He's at Richard Gunther, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Facebook. We've got some other podcasts, even other ones that we haven't talked about yet, including Richard's other show on the DMZ called Home On, covering the latest smart home news. I'm going to start the plug for this, Richard. I listened to your brand new episode. It came out today. I listened to it today. It was so good. I've never read or heard anything from your guest, but she was so knowledgeable. She just an absolutely excellent guest host for you. So tell us more about the guest and this episode.
She really was. And I'm so glad that people are enjoying this. This was with Jennifer Patsantui, and she's a journalist who doesn't really come from a tech background, but writes about smart home technology for places like Dwell and Wirecutter and The Ambient. And these are, you know, Wirecutter people know for sure. The Ambient is a little bit less known. It's a UK-based home and home technology site. And Dwell, of course, is a site and publication that focuses on the home. And they're starting to look into how technology plays into the home and home design. And so she writes for them as well. So she has a really good consumer perspective on things. This was such a hard episode to edit because I didn't want to cut anything. We had such a good conversation. She was, like you said, incredibly knowledgeable. So if you haven't checked this out yet, please give it a listen. Jennifer Patsantui, she was fantastic. And I also highly recommend that you check her out on The Ambient, and she has some reviews coming out on The Wirecutter too. Coming up next in a couple of weeks, we're going to have Colin Billings, the CEO and founder of a company called Oro Lighting, and they have a new product out somewhat similar to the Brilliant Light Switch product that you may remember me slamming on pretty heavily, but I like what Oro is doing. So come find out why, and we'll have a good discussion about that with their founder in a couple weeks.
Cool. I said last week that the next episode of Story Players is coming soon.
You did say that.
I wasn't lying. We're going to finish recording it tomorrow. Okay? So it should be any day now at this point, hopefully. That'll be for the last and final episode of The Walking Dead, the game. So look for that very soon in your Story Players feed. Story Players is the video game spoiler cast. Again, another DMZ podcast. If you like story-based games, go and check out Story Players. And then come back to the DMZ every Tuesday night. Well, most Tuesday nights at least, because we typically record this show, this one right here that you're listening to on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's live. It's got a live stream. It's got live video and audio and a chat room so that you can be a part of the show like GP3 just was just moments ago. That could be you next time, because that's going to do it for episode 484. He's Richard Gunther and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.